everybody, Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy Tom Fairbanks. Tom, the bird bass did not freeze last night, so
that means... did Woodstock have swim flippers on instead of ice skates on his little feet?
And all of those coverings that I went out and did, two of them wound up in the pool. So, yeah, there was the wind that came along. I guess I should have used the clothespins to secure them, but away they went. Do I need to? Do I need to
was
cover?
Was it breezy again? As well?
Yes.
As, okay.
Yes.
All right.
Anyway, here we go. We are off and running on the Buckmaster Show. It's the 10th of January, 2025. We welcome you to the program, broadcasting from Central Tucson in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios, part of the Bustos Media Broadcast Center, where we have five radio stations under one roof. This one's 1030 KVOI, Tucson's trusted voice for news and talk. We began our 15th year last week, celebrated 14 full years last Thursday, which means we're now into year 15 and into my 37th year in Tucson radio and TV. We have our worldwide listening and podcasts at buckmastershow.com. When we do our telephone interviews, folks want to join us, they're always welcome at 790-2040. The live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. A couple of media shout-outs on Friday. We like to thank our media partners, which include the Green Valley News and Soho Rita Sun, and Dan Shears here. Dan works for those two fine newspapers. Dan, thanks for being here.
Thank you, Bill.
TucsonSentinel.com also supports us with putting our logo prominently displayed on their site, and as does a new edition. Tucson Spotlight is one of our supporters. Our Friday Focus interview today, Pima County Attorney Laura Conover. Laura joins us once a quarter on the Buckmaster Show. Laura was sworn in officially this week for her second four-year term as Pima County's top legal officer. And before I welcome Laura, I do want to mention that Dan, in addition to his job in Green Valley with the two papers, he's the editorial director for about 30 newspapers in 13 states owned by Sierra Vista-based WIC Communications. Is that about right still, 13 states?
That is exactly right.
Wow. That's a lot.
Anyway.
All out west.
All right. Well, Happy New Year to you, Dan, and Happy
Thanks.
New Year, Laura. I think we can still say Happy New Year to somebody I haven't seen in the new year, so I haven't seen you. So how are you? How are things going? Did you have a good holiday?
Happy New Year to all three of you, and very happy to be back. We had a good holiday. We did everything differently this year, and so
with a live tree or a
we got our little man. Yeah, we got our little man out to see all of his cousins in California and the Chicago cousins came. Yeah, so we did it very differently this year in a worked out.
Very nice.
Yeah.
What kind of year was it for your office, 2024?
Well, I think I really want to say that a success looking back was just that, as insane as the year was for me, obviously kind of trying to do two jobs of being the county attorney first and foremost, and then also, you know, asking
the
people,
asking
the people if they wanted to do a second term. Mm-hmm. I think we successfully shielded the office from that, and for good reason. I mean, Civil was completely busy with the end of reproductive health litigation and representing every county agency. It looks like we're triple checking, but it looks like criminal completed 147 felony jury trials. So they should be so proud of
their
hard, hard work.
Is that a record, do you think, for the office? Or?
It's a recent record in the sense that everything having ground to a halt in COVID and creating that COVID backlog.
So coming out of COVID, it's certainly a milestone.
Yes, and the bench was really set on doing it kind of in an overnight standpoint and going just kind of from 0 to 60, you know, overnight, and our troops really rose to the occasion and need to feel really good and proud about what they achieved. So I think so overall, you know, and then the people decided that we're going to do it for four more years, and that's a blessing and a huge honor and a huge obligation that I take very, very, very seriously.
Are you welcoming new team members?
Yes, we have had some new team members coming. We're in another heavy recruiting session. The legal world is a bit up in the air right now. So lots of conversations going on behind the scenes, but November and December are really big, Bill, because, and Dan, as I was mentioning earlier, we make job offers to brand new lawyers coming out of law school in February, and we have to wait all year for, they graduate in May, take the bar exam in July, finally get licensed like in about November. And all those, kids, you know, brand new lawyers coming in, and that's contagious.
And that brings a lot of enthusiasm.
Yeah.
Here's Dan Scheer.
We spoke to you last month, at least that was when the story was published, about drugs, and a couple of interesting things came out of there. First of all, I didn't know that the drug lords, or the people selling the stuff on the street, were so market-oriented. Mm-hmm. Terms like market dominance came up, and this drug is no longer popular, or we have an oversupply, so we're going to now push this one rather than others. And a couple of things, though, is that we saw that between 2019 and 2023, Pima County saw a spike in fatal fentanyl overdoses, but in 24 there's been a significant decline in fentanyl and meth overdoses. But is meth now becoming the new problem?
The way I look at it, and I try to talk to experts on the ground on this all the time, and we are on the ground, especially when we look at our drug court work and our Nahadin Jabro, our director of specialty courts. I mean, they're really in the weeds on this. And I don't think it's that meth ever disappeared. I think it just that fentanyl dominated, as you said, that both the market and the scene and the media attention. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And critically, we are seeing really some success, you know, measurable success on overdose deaths. That number's plummeting. And, you know, I think we're getting fentanyl a little bit more in check from it feeling like an out of control problem just 2 or 3 years ago. And so then you're going to see meth kind of where it was, and it kind of rears its ugly head again a little bit. But the county should really be proud that, you know, from public health to law enforcement to our office to all of social work, you know, you have so many factors coming together and partnerships coming together to try to deal with fentanyl, and they're having some success.
And you have, your office now is a distributor of Narcan. Can you tell us how you arrived at that decision and how it's paying off?
Yeah, absolutely. Certainly, again, We started our first administration at the height of COVID pre-vaccine, right? And I know that I was really already leaning towards a way to want to partner with public health as much as humanly possible. I feel like public health and public safety have to go hand in hand. And the data is really clear on that. And then COVID just heightened that. So we were naturally going out to resource fairs in neighborhoods nights and weekends with our gun locks and very focused on that, right? That's sort of an obvious function. And then realizing that the goal is to get Narcan into every first aid kit. You just normalize it. You kind of want it to be in every first aid kit. You want it to be schools and libraries and just anywhere a first aid kit is. And so it became obvious that we should just be distributing Narcan as well, and then making sure that it's on site, even in our building, because we're right downtown, and just making sure it's on hand, because if you've never seen it in action, you can go online to our PSA and you can see it actually being distributed and how it restarts the heart. It's incredible.
Our story included talking to several people who live on the streets and drug addicts. We can use that term. And they're terrified of going through some sort of rehab, because first of all, it's a very distressing and awful, you know, 24 hours. One woman told us it was the worst day of her life to start, you know, backing off from those drugs and everything. This is really not your problem, but it's all of our problem. How do we get those people off the streets?
Well, Dan, I bear with me, but words, you know, are really important, and something been doing here for 4 years now is trying to shift and just bringing humanity back in. So we really think about people who are suffering from substance use disorder. When we need to try to label populations that we're talking about, if we have to do that, and then you said it just right, right? I mean, you're talking about suffering. You're talking about someone who reported to you the worst day of their life, and to the extent that I didn't want to treat fentanyl as special, in the sense of having done that for decades on the war on drugs, like, oh, this is different, and so therefore we have to just sweep the streets and imprison everyone. Wanting to be so much smarter about it, but what we have seen is the withdrawal of fentanyl does seem to just be so much more violent and difficult and sickening, for lack of a better word. The good news is medication-assisted treatment. You hear that a lot. You hear MAT. You hear that phrase MAT a lot. Medication-assisted treatment is real. It's working. It's very successful. I think I want to say Suboxone, in getting people to much more carefully and in a monitored way. You know, you can do this safely, and it's all about being ready and then having people around you to support you to do it safely and in a healthy way.
All right. Laura Conover is here, Pima County Attorney. Dan Scheer here from the Green Valley News. A listener just sent me a message. Narcan is available for free at every library in Pima County.
I think that is right, Anna. Yeah. And I'm thinking about the Pima County Public Health website, where you can, you know, it's like a map of, you know, millions of tiny little red dots where you can get your hands on it quickly.
So it's readily available.
Well said.
All right. Before we take the break, your office, Laura Conover, deciding after a third grand jury declined yesterday to indict former police officer Ryan Remington on a manslaughter charge in the killing of Richard Lee Richards outside a Lowe's store in Tucson Southside. And of course, this was the shooting and killing of him fleeing in a mobility scooter in 2021. So three tries, you're not going to go for any more.
That's right. What we always say is, unless new information comes to light, you know, we always reserve that right, of course, but we don't expect that in such a thorough investigation. And the grand jury came back yesterday and declined all criminal charges, and we'll be respecting that. We're disappointed. To the extent that these cases always get a full court press nationwide, and a full defense. We tried to meet that measure for measure because we think it was righteous to go to the grand jury, but they have spoken, and we will move on.
A listener brings up an interesting point, and I'm going to entertain it with you, that if the shooter had not been a former police officer, do you think that might have made a difference?
Well, lawyers always try to honor the rule to not speculate, right? Mm-hmm. But I'll answer it in a different question, which is something that I said yesterday, which is that there are laws nationwide, and Arizona is no different, that must be considered and then must be read aloud as jury instructions to any juries in a grand jury or a trial jury. That only apply to police officers in the line of duty and don't apply to the rest of us. And so those are added protections that have to be considered before a police officer would be found guilty. And of course, that's a big wide debate over that.
All right, we'll take a break right here. Dan Scheer, Laura Conover, Bill Buckmaster, all with you on Friday afternoon. Take a break. More with the Pima County Attorney, Laura Conover, right after this.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
Take the Regional Transportation Authority's brief survey of its draft $2.46 billion Regional Transportation Plan. The 20-year RTA Next Draft Plan includes roadway, transit, safety, bicycle, pedestrian, and environmental improvements for the greater Tucson region. The RTA Board will consider your feedback before it prepares a final draft for voter consideration as early as November 2025. We invite you to take our brief survey at rtanext.com.
Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com. This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The News and Sun's media reach 75% of the region through newspapers, websites, social media, video, newsletters, and more. They also produce more than a dozen print and digital magazines annually for an audience of 70,000. Find them at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, covering your hometown.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. The Friday Focus interview today, Laura Conover is here, Pima County Attorney Dan Scheer from the Green Valley and Sahorita Sun, joining us as my co-media host. We do that on Friday. Dan, before we leave that grand jury situation, you had a couple of follow-ups.
Yes. Have you ever had a case that has gone to three grand juries like this one?
Yes. It's obviously not common, although there was a massive Arizona Supreme Court case that did alter, maybe two or three years ago, that did alter some of the grand jury practices. And so going back has actually become more and more common. I think the power to remand so a defense attorney has a chance to ask that it go back for a second review. So that's become more and more common. But put another way, you know, an officer involved shooting, trying an excessive use of force case, has all kinds of unusual elements to it. They are very hard cases to bring.
TucsonSentinel.com did a really good story on this. And from that, your comments after the third grand jury came back, you said that you have not ruled over a shooting, the county hasn't, by a police officer since 1989.
What?
That's your office, 35 years.
Wow. So to clarify, so really, really important to clarify, and if I wasn't clear yesterday, but what I was saying was that the last time an officer-involved shooting went to trial in Pima County,
right,
stemmed from events, right, in 1989. And what that meant was that because there was no history of locally prosecuting officers for a shooting, we went to Maricopa County and built a consulting team of veteran former prosecutors who had personally tried cases up there, and then that led us to our use of force expert out of LA. But right, there was literally no one even alive to locally consult with.
Wow.
who had prosecuted in a court of law an officer in a shooting.
All right, let's go to our live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management, 790-2040. Roberta would like to re-entertain our discussion about Tucson's drug situation. Go ahead, Roberta. You're with Laura Conover.
Thank you. Last night on the radio, I heard a gentleman say he weaned himself off of drugs by taking less and less each day until he was made... What he would have taken in a month, he took in 90 days, and he just kept weaning himself off till he was off of them, and that way he did not go through the heavy withdrawal.
Okay.
Roberta, I appreciate that comment, and it really highlights that any person suffering from substance use disorder they're going to have their own journey, and it's all different. And I'll say, Dan and his team who went out and interviewed people, what he knows is that that was a very brave and difficult way to do it, quite frankly. It's all extremely difficult. And I want to lift up one more time the people who work, you know, directly at the Crisis Response Center, at Kodak, at other places that serve people suffering, you know, they're heroes out there in the medical field.
How about the death penalty? Would you like to see this whole thing opened up again into a real study of it, Laura Conover?
Well, it's been on the front of my mind, right? I've had a lot of questions because we had a brief moratorium here in Arizona of a couple of years, and now, you know, it's gearing back up again, it looks like, to... most certainly. I mean, there's a live case right now where I think that death warrant has been requested to move forward. And, you know, and I've shared this with my colleagues, Chris Mays, Attorney General, with the governor's office, with Katie Hobbs, that I'd like to suggest that after 4 years of not seeking the death penalty here in Pima County, I think we are proving it's not necessary. And that, you know, and we're working on a financial report to show the savings. We've handled cases that would have called for the death penalty previously, and we get them to trial and we get convictions, and it's for natural life in prison, which frankly is a different kind of death sentence, right? We have sentenced a person to live out in prison and to die there. And then the case ends, and there's closure. And I would never speak for victims directly, but at least we've tried to provide closure much quicker than you know, 30, 40 years of death penalty.
And is
litigation.
There a considerable cost savings?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the one thing I've said is that after what's called the Ring decision, you try a person for murder, and then you have a second trial as to what the penalty will be. You know, will it be life or death? And so just right there, we don't have second jury trials anymore. So that's sort of a very, very easy visual that we can point to. Mm-hmm. And then from there, the cost savings is just extraordinary for the whole state, right? It's local, it's the jail, it's prison, it's statewide.
Dan, I know you have some thoughts about this.
Right. You wrote a really interesting piece for TucsonSentinel.com about this. You made some really good points, and we won't debate those right now. But I will say that I want to focus specifically on those sentenced to die whose crimes stem from cognitive disability, which is what you say, the term you used. My question is, why would it even happen that somebody gets the death penalty who has a mental illness or some sort of cognitive disability? Why would we even find ourselves in that situation?
Well, correct me, Dan, but I do think we finally... have movement on that now, where we don't have the death penalty anymore if certain factors are proven about what's going on in the cognitive arena, and also we've had movement on juveniles, right, too, and in recognition of brain development. But when we look at people, the populations that are on death row, and in jails and prisons in general, you know, mental illness is there at such a high percentage. So we know it's factoring into, into the populations that end up on death row.
One of your points was that the cost, which you just addressed with Bill, but it also costs a lot of money to house these people for a lifetime. Now, would you just say do they negate each other or?
Well, in particular, Dan, because we're living in a world where people aren't actually being taken for execution until 30, 35, 40 years down the road, you're paying for that incarceration either way. The difference is that we stop litigating those cases at a reasonable period of time instead of look at the litigation going on now at the highest level in the Attorney General's office to get one case through, right? Like, that's all litigation that I suggest is unnecessary.
You also bring up the victims' families in this case, and how much of a say or how much sway do they get when it comes to pursuing a case like this, death penalty versus life? I know they don't make the call, but you listen to them.
First and foremost, these are the most difficult meetings that I have. At least in my personal experience, I had made a promise coming in 4 years ago that if anyone had lost a loved one in a criminal justice involved incident, they had the right to meet with me personally. And that has been requested far too many times. You know, we had a backlog of 144 homicides coming in. So you can imagine the number of meetings that I've had. And then I watch the talent on display and compassion and caring and professionalism by our victim service advocates, right? And I can't speak to what happened before, but I can say that upon arrival, because I had promised we would not be seeking the death penalty and because I was committed to honoring that commitment I made to the public, I had to have a number of very difficult meetings of pending cases and then a few cases where I acknowledge to the family that this might have been considered before, and I understand this, and we don't have it anymore. And I have to tell you that whether it's luck or whether it's Tucson, and part of me really believes it's Tucson, these families were so unbelievably gracious, and most of them cited culture and religion for their own reasons for being opposed and still opposed despite their grief, still opposed to the death penalty.
Interesting. Let's go to the live line. Sharon has been waiting very patiently. Thank you, Sharon, calling 790-2040. You're with Laura Conover.
Hi, thank you. Yes, I'm hoping the county attorney can explain what the law is and what the policy is in Pima County. When there is someone who is unhoused but having violence because of drug interaction, I was at a park and the police didn't come because the person didn't want to go into treatment, so they said there was nothing they could do. What is the law? What is the policy if somebody is, say, at the public library? They're unhoused, but they're having violence or mental health trauma because of drug interaction.
Good question,
yeah,
actually.
It's a perfect question. So, Sharon, I want to make this really clear, and this is something I try to do so much training on to both out to neighborhoods and people and also, frankly, with our law enforcement partners, is that we train on a theory of ongoing threat of harm. So in other words, if the person is behaving violently, if they are behaving aggressively in an assaultive way, right, there's sort of the legal term assault, we absolutely want them to be apprehended. We want that harm to be interrupted immediately, and that's the mission of our law enforcement partners. And then we take that into serious consideration. If someone is woken up, you know, woken up from sleep and has a pill on them, we're not going to take that to a felony jury trial. It's true. We couldn't possibly charge a felony on on those thousands and thousands of cases. You know, no one is funded or capable for that. But if someone is being aggressive and violent towards people in a library, a Walgreens, a grocery store, we want that harm immediately interrupted. And then we will pursue based on the assaultive behavior. So we're really trying to carve out, if a person is an ongoing threat of harm, they're going to be separated and held accountable versus everyone else who we can safely and carefully move into the medical and behavioral health realm. Hmm.
We should also bring up, Dan Scheer, the issue of shoplifting. So many of the merchants are complaining about it. Laura Conover, how does your office address this issue?
At the point where felony level behavior has occurred, and you know that's when it comes to our felony trial teams, you're talking generally about repetitive behavior, right? Where we have a number of incidents and or an amount that's stolen that reaches all the way up to the felony level, and we have a very high charging and prosecution rate on that. You can imagine those cases are well put together, right? You know, when it comes to like a Walgreens, for example, or what have you, you know, this person's on camera repeatedly over a series of dates, and that's called organized retail theft, again, to throw out the legal term. And we have a very high charging rate and prosecution rate of that. The problem, I think, for sure, is that most of this is misdemeanor and going over to the Tucson City Court that we don't have any power over.
Kind of snatch and grab stuff.
Right. It's misdemeanor level, you know, 90% of the time, and we don't see it. It goes over to City Court.
But as, right. If I may, Bill.
No, I was just going to turn it over to you, Dan.
Very good. Very good. So you know that we had that case that you declined to prosecute, the corrections officer, and he was caught on video at least 18 times shoplifting, and you said, look, that's 18 misdemeanor cases I don't have. Basically, it's not worth going after, which we fully understand. Can you not take those 18 misdemeanor cases and you just kind of suggested that you could and bring them all together as a felony, or what's the thought on this?
So the difference in that particular case, you know, and this is a point of frustration, right? Is that once the case comes to us, it becomes a legal and subjective analysis. It's true. It's not black and white. Like every case and every set of factors are looked at independently. And in that case, if I recall correctly, Dan, even when you added everything up, we were still under that $1,000 felony level. Like we would have had to add everything up and then push it and kind of say this case has to be treated differently for some reason, and push it up into that felony level. And again, as I recall, you know, it was food. As far, you know, so all of these become, you know, that was stolen, right? All of these become factors. And again, someone with no criminal history whatsoever, et cetera, et cetera. So you add up all those factors together, and the question was, do you force this into a felony? And I'm sure that there were a couple of second thoughts about that, and I think there was consultation with a supervisor because that person was in a position of trust, right? They're a corrections officer. That's a position of trust. But in consultation with the town attorney in Sahuarita, I think was the jurisdiction, and knowing that they were going to decide to go ahead and pursue on the misdemeanor, that seemed appropriate. It seemed an appropriate resolution.
So a person like that, one individual, that is not considered organized retail theft. Is that accurate?
If, you know, usually, Dan, when we do have 18 times like this, and so you can see how facts are so important, right? Like he was stealing food over a period of time. Usually the cases that come into us, you can imagine, it's like perfume and makeup and things like that, because they can then turn around and sell, or they're, you know, they're buying drugs with it. And that's when you get that phrase organized retail theft, which again, you know, and generally, at that level, we're also going to be presented with criminal history, right? And then you're getting a whole other idea of, wow, we got to intervene here. We got to hold this person accountable. Whereas that, you know, that corrections officer case was obviously quite extraordinarily different.
Before we go, those who have been convicted of marijuana convictions, say 40, 30 years ago, are you still working to expunge those records?
Absolutely. We're still expunging. Since I came into office, we now have some new opportunities out of Arizona law to seal old records for a person who has an old record and has been responsible and made right and getting records sealed. And we try to do everything we can in our part to partner with people like Fresh Start, groups like Fresh Start, to make sure that we're doing everything we can to make people who have worked so hard be employed, be housed, be working hard, be supporting their family, because that's how you really drive the crime rate down.
Yeah, because that's on their record, right? I mean,
Oh yeah.
Okay, Dan, you've got one more.
I hate to just drop this on you with no warning or anything, but it's the weekend of the Tucson Jazz Festival. I know you're a fan. who are you looking to see?
Oh my gosh, all of them. And so the problem is going to have to be picking and choosing, of course. But since you put me on the spot, Dan, I'm a huge Emmett Cohen fan. Okay. You know, the Emmett Cohen Trio. You know, he goes live every Monday night. You can just go on to his YouTube channel. And yeah, no, I'm all right. I'm named for the jazz standard, Laura. So yeah. Thanks,
very
Dan.
Good.
Very good.
All right. Laura Conover. Thank you, Laura. We'll look forward to your visit with us in the spring. Thanks a lot.
Thanks very much.
Dan Scheer, stick around. I've got a couple of items for you, including what's going on with Copper World. We'll be right back on the Buckmaster Show.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com. Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rialto River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com. Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. It's now time for segment three on our Friday show, and that means that's when my co-media host and I talk about a couple of big stories because, well, we've got a little time here before we have segment four, which would be Weekend Watch with 101.7 The Drive. What's going on with what's called Copper World? And, of course, this is a name, the current name for the bloodline goes back all the way to Rosemont Mine, right, Dan?
Sure does. So Augusta Resource owned them originally, and then Hudbay bought them quite a few years
ago. Toronto, Canada.
Correct. Yeah. And then the Rosemont project on the eastern side of the Santa Ritas was pretty much hung up and in court, and pretty much they're going to step away from that. Hudbay will step away from that, except they can still mine about half of it. There's still going to be mining going on over there. It's going to be years, but it's going to happen. So really the Copper World project, though, is the big one. And this is the one that you can see from Green Valley and Sahuarito, where I live, and it's out near, you know, Corona de Tucson area. And so that's a big one. There are a lot of meetings recently, and they recently received their third approval from the state. That's all they needed. They needed a mine plan, which was done a long time ago, then water permits. They have received those. So now they're going to go into about a year and a half of just kind of looking at the land and saying, okay, how are we going to do this? And then the digging won't actually start probably for 4 or 5 years, Bill. Mm-hmm. It's still going to be a ways out there, but there's going to be a lot of activity, and there is activity out there right now, just carving roads and, you know, figuring out again which way, you know, things are going to operate. It's kind of in a shape of a capital F, so it's a really strange piece of land connections.
But visible.
Oh, absolutely. And there'll be open pits, several of them. And then there are dust issues and water issues and all the stuff that we'll be going into. But they got the state permits, and this was what they didn't need. They don't need any federal permits, which is what they had on the other side of the mountain, which is what really hung them up. They needed, you know, 17 different approvals, and on this side it was just a handful. So it will happen, it looks like. The Save the Scenic Santa Rita Center for Biological Diversity are still going to be challenging them, and as expected in court, we'll see what happens with that. And it will probably be challenged at every step, but it looks right now that it's going to happen.
In your area of influence, where your papers cover, how big a deal is getting access to health care locally?
Oh, boy. We recently have had four general practitioners announce that they are either leaving or scaling back. And so the specialists, people are kind of used to coming up to Tucson or the specialists come down 1 or 2 days a week in our area. But more and more, it's just the GPs that are really becoming difficult to get a hold of. And now people are kind of comparing notes, and they're saying, yeah, I'm going to go see a new GP, and I have an appointment for August. You know, there's one who I know went past a year for a specialist.
Goodness.
And it's like, if something's going on, you know, there are always ways to, you know, push your way in. But this is a huge issue, Bill, and it's just getting bigger.
Hospital care?
Well, we have the Green Valley Hospital down there, and that hasn't been open for a couple of years. 2.5 years ago, it closed. It was built in 2015, been in bankruptcy, the whole bit. About a year ago, it went on the market. This is a 49-bed hospital. Originally cost $75 million to build. Went on the market a year ago for $35
million. Wow.
It sold a couple weeks ago for $2.5 million.
You gotta be kidding.
Not a typo, as we say. And so all we know, and I've been trying to get a hold of the owner. I've tried, you know,
$2.5 million.
To me, that's almost like a teardown. All what we have been told, though, fairly officially, is that it will not be a hospital. So what do you do with with an old hospital?
I don't know.
And so we're trying to answer that question, but we do have Northwest Medical Center in Sahuarito. We've been talking to them recently about different things. They are now going to open up a OBGYN clinic in our area. They don't have a date for it yet, but we're excited about that because up in Sahuarito, that's a need. But people sure do wish that we could have that hospital down in Green Valley, but it sure looks like it's not going to happen.
So somebody paid what originally for now this padlocked hospital.
And it's gorgeous, and it's 20 acres too. And
whoa.
I'm thinking, what are you going to do with that? So we have a while ago looked at what do you do with a closed hospital, and we found one place that actually had turned it into an automotive repair shop. You know, part of it at least.
Yeah.
So it could be lots of different things. It could be a rehab center. It could be a senior living apartments. It could be. It's a gorgeous, solid building in a nice place. And so we'll see what happens. But I.
Why would a hospital in an area with a large elderly population not make it in Green Valley?
Two reasons. One is that Medicare payments have been really severely cut, and doctors just aren't getting as much for doing the stuff. And the second is getting the specialists down there, because a lot of them have to live within, you know, X number of minutes of the hospital in case there's an emergency, or they have to come down regularly. And it was just so difficult to get the staffing. That was really a big, big part of it.
Laura Conover talked about it, enthusiasm of young lawyers coming into her office. And I'm reflecting on our business, the journalism business. You've got papers all over the West. How difficult is it to find some young people that want to work in Wasilla, Alaska, or Bismarck, North Dakota, or South Dakota, or wherever?
It's very difficult. And you know that term, ink in the veins. And and you have it. I have it. We meet people every once in a while who we just know they got it, and they can't imagine doing anything else. Those people are tougher and tougher to find because there are more options for them. And the options usually include advocating for a cause that is important to them, or
advocacy journalism.
Absolutely. It's huge. But we can't go there. People look at us to be objective, up the middle, and fair. Before Laura Conover left here just a few minutes ago off the air, she said, thank you for your fair questions. Mm-hmm. And so we're not playing gotcha journalism or anything, and we present all the facts and as much as we can. And that's the way it should be, and people look for that. But young people anymore are not being drawn to that type of journalism. Mm,
that's very sad.
Yeah.
All right, Dan Scheer, thank you very much. And by the way, our heart goes out to all of the people in Southern California, and it just breaks our heart. And we talked a little bit about it, the politicalization of what's going on. Can we put that on the back burner, or maybe that's shouldn't talk about a burner, but how about let's put the fires out first?
Absolutely, and then help the people and see what they need.
Help these people.
Some great stories will be coming out of this regarding insurance and some mistakes that have been made. But
imagine all of your work with like your IRS stuff, all of your health records gone. It's
everything.
Horrible. Anyway, thanks, Dan.
Very good, Bill.
All right, we'll take a break right here. It's time for Weekend Watch with 101.7 The Drive. Right after this.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com. You can now review and comment on the Regional Transportation Authority's draft $2.46 billion regional transportation plan at one of several upcoming RTA Next open houses. The draft 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, safety, bicycle, pedestrian, and environmental improvements for the greater Tucson region. It's your plan. Tell us what you think. Learn more and find dates for an upcoming open house near you at rtanext.com.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We are also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
Are you ready to immerse yourself in a diverse culture while wandering through bustling markets, sampling exotic cuisines, or forging connections with people from all walks of life? Well, Bon Voyage Travel is here to plan your perfect journey. Whether you're setting off on a solo expedition, embarking on a group adventure, or simply dreaming of far-off destinations, we can help create your custom experience. The road ahead is filled with endless possibilities. Visit bvtravel.com to find your specialized Bon Voyage Travel advisor today.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Welcome back. It is time for a Weekend Watch with 101.7 The Drive, presented by Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. I always make such a great getaway over to the Land of Enchantment. How about an enchanting weekend over in Silver City? A ton of stuff to do over there. Only about a three-hour drive east of Tucson. It's basically hit I-10. Take a left at Lordsburg, up the mountain, and you're in a very different kind of environment. Start your planning now by visiting southwestnewmexico.org. Leslie Lois joining us now from 101.7 The Drive with all sorts of enchanting ideas for a great weekend. Hey, Leslie.
Hi. Good afternoon.
What's going on this weekend?
Well, the circus is in town.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the Zopay Family Circus. They've been coming here now for years.
They do a nice job. It's a family-owned and operated group. Yeah, they do a great job.
Nino the Clown is going to be back. And it opens up today, runs through the 26th. It's at the Mercado District. I've heard, it is an old-school circus. Mm-hmm. And expect to be like, wow. And you can get ringside seats for $40, but $25 for general admission. And I've never seen it. I kind of actually was thinking about taking our granddaughter there.
Well, it sounds like a great family event.
Yes.
And what is the name of this? He's kind of, the iconic clown for their circus.
I know, Nino. That's
Nino. <yeah. laughs> Nino's in town. Let's go see him. Yeah, so that's great. Circus is in town. What else is in town this
also,
weekend?
Also, lots of barks. Bark in the Barrio is happening this weekend. This is at the Pima Animal Care Center hosting this event. Mm-hmm. It's the third annual one. It's happening at Armory Park downtown. There's, going to be adoptable dogs from several organizations and rescues. You can find pet vendors, food trucks, games going on. This is 11 to 2 tomorrow. It is free to attend as well. Now, this one, it was interesting. We've gotten a number of our listeners who were asking about this. It's the Quilt Fiesta.
The Quilt.
Yes, the Quilt Fiesta. A lot of people are into this. It's
the quilters get their own event.
Yes.
All right.
It's at the Pima County Fairgrounds.
Wow.
I know. It's at the Old Pueblo Hall.
I was thinking it'd be some small venue, but there must be a lot of quilters in
town. I know,
and
we've gotten quite a lot of phone calls asking about it.
Whoa.
So it's going on today through Sunday, and it's $10 per day or $20 for a three-day pass. And there is parking. There's going to be food. There's going to be lots of raffles, of course, vendors, small quilt charity sale, quilts of all kinds of different. There's vintage quilts. There are all kinds. I don't know all the different quilts, but they have them all.
Well, there'll probably be some really antique quilts out there that are very desirable.
Yes. You know,
there's a big market, I guess, for that.
Yeah.
Quilts are really cool. So, I was getting back to the animal care. We had Steve Kasachek, who's now the interim director. He was on the show with us on Wednesday, and he said they've just got a ton of dogs, Leslie, because of the fireworks and people shooting off guns and things in the air on New Year's. So let's really try to support that this weekend. Again, what was the location?
It is at Armory Park downtown.
Yeah.
And it's from 11 to 2. So, yeah, come go and find a pet for your, give them a forever home.
So a lot going on, and 101.7 The Drive. I wanted to ask you, you had such a successful with that Volkswagen.
Yeah.
Do you have any kind of follow-up? How's the lady that the very enthusiastic lady. I mean, we love to see all the social media posts. Oh my gosh, I've won, you know. Any follow-up? Is she happy with the automobile?
She is thrilled.
I assume she is.
She had the car in the downtown Parade of Lights with us. I got to work with her and her husband, and we decorated the and she was telling me she's having a ball driving it around. Like, people wave at her.
There she is. The woman that won the car on the drive.
I know, it's a yellow Beetle, and it kind of stands out.
So. All right. Thank you so much, Leslie.
You're welcome.
A great weekend.
Thank you,
The Buckmaster Show is a presentation of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, which is wholly responsible for the content of our program. My thanks to the team over at The Drive, and of course, Tom Fairbanks on the other side of the glass, engineering and producing our program. All of us at KVOI and Bustos Media wish you a wonderful weekend.